Welcome to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's live streaming interview series, where leading New Thought teachers, speakers, and authors share the intimate stories behind the 10 best spiritual books that inspired them the most on their spiritual journey. From well-known classics to hidden gems you might never have heard of, the No BS Spiritual Book Club saves you time and money by sharing reliable recommendations from those who've walked the path before you. The No BS Spiritual Book Club, the only No BS guide to the best spiritual books to inspire your own journey of self-discovery. Here's your host, founder of the No BS Spiritual Book Club, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello and welcome, and joining me today to share the 10 books that influenced her the most on her life journey is physicist, author, speaker, international teacher and change agent, Dr. Teresa Bullard-Wyck, who is the host of Gaia TV's Mystery Teaching Show, as well as her own Quantum Minds TV show. A little bit about Dr. Teresa. Throughout her life journey, she's discovered innovative ways to weave together her formal education as a PhD physicist with her deep training in the modern mystery school lineage and her passion for bridging science and spirituality in a practical way. She fuses together modern day quantum physics with powerful time-tested techniques for harnessing consciousness, and she's presented to live audiences all around the world since 2002. Dr. Teresa Bullard-Wyck, welcome.
Thank you, Sandy. It's a pleasure to be joining you again.
Now, I know that you've read so many great books throughout your life. So how did you manage this process of having to pick just 10?
You know, it was challenging to narrow it down because there's so many good books. Mm. And it was fun to kind of take a trip down memory lane and think about my journey and think about which books really stood out as significant, bringing me significant ahas, and really were key things for me to encounter along the way. And yet, you know, I didn't really even touch on the novels that I enjoyed along the way. I really touched on mostly the nonfiction, but ancient wisdom that I think is so revealing still, to, because it's universal. It still applies even in our modern world. And I think that this ancient wisdom is something that we so need and in our world today. And it's what I like about it is it's time tested. And so it still persists, even though current trends and what's popular might change. The ancient wisdom really stays with us all the time, whether, you know, it's not really about our opinions about it. It's more about what's real and what's true at a universal level. And then the science, you know, of course, I have the background in science. So I brought in some of that, how we can bridge those two worlds.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, how much of the ancient wisdom is now being uncovered again when we most need it, and how many people are kind of disseminating this wisdom through fictionalized works as well.
Yeah. So there's some great novels, and there's some great sci-fi, and there's, you know, even the fantasy genre is really bringing some of these, you know, ancient kind of concepts and teachings through again. I think it's still better to go to the older classics versus some of the new stuff, which can get watered down at times.
Do you recall the first spiritual book you ever read?
Oh my gosh. That's a tough one because my mom introduced me to a lot at an early age, but I think maybe the Tao Te Ching was the very first spiritual book. Actually, when I got into, you know, of course, as a child, I was really into like Aladdin. Aladdin was one of my favorite, you know, kind of films, and I read some of the books as well. But when I got into college, to the university, there was an honors English class that I was in, and we studied the transcendental poets from like Wordsworth and Thoreau and William Blake and Emerson. And they really spoke to me and woke me up. And that was probably my first personal spiritual resonance. And from there, my mom said, well, if you're interested in that, you might like the Tao Te Ching, you might like some Zen, you know. And so then I started exploring into some Eastern philosophy from there.
Mm, yeah. So the first book on your list, I smiled when I saw it, because this is one possibly right at the top, comes up the most, I would think, along with The Alchemist and the Four Agreements. You know, there's three that really pop up all the time. And of course, it is The Prophet, Kenneth Gibran, first published, who knows when it was first published? What is it? Something like 12th century, I believe.
Long time.
Yeah. So what was it about this book that really did it for you?
I mean, Khalil Gibran is so deep in his insight into this mystical experience of the soul, but also how it really applies to life. And so I just love the little lessons of, you know, will teach us about life, teach us about death, teach us about love, beauty, sorrow, you know, these things that we experience in our everyday human lives, but that are the kinds of experiences that really make us start to question and really look up, like, what is the deeper essence of life? What is the meaning of this experience? Why is this, you know, happening to me? What do we place our greater value in? And I love poetry, you know, because it just speaks to not so much to the rational mind, but to that, you know, to the soul. And it can be creative, but I think Gibran's The Prophet just really speaks directly to the soul. And there's just such universal wisdom in there. So anytime I've, you know, been in a place of feeling like a bit of heartbreak around love, for example, I would go and read his section, his poem on love. Anytime there was, you know, about questions of life and death, I go and read on that one. Beauty and, you know, joy and sorrow. Like I read a lot of these on a regular basis. And then I've even, because they're so universal, they really show us the polarity of life and how we appreciate one through the contrast with the polar side. And this is very much applicable to some of the things that I teach in the Kabbalistic system as well. So I would often bring in some poetry from The Prophet into the teachings and how it relates to the Tree of Life. And it's just, it just speaks to everybody, I think. So.
Oh, it does indeed. I mean, this is why I think it's up there with something like the Four Agreements, because it's just timeless wisdom. And I think his advice on, you know, parenting, or his insights on parenting are probably the best information any parent could have. Live by that and you've cracked it.
Yeah. And you mentioned The Alchemist as well. I mean, I've read almost all of Paulo Coelho's books, and they're, you know, what I found with those, I know they're not on my list, but what I found with those is that they find, like, the right one found me at the right time,
yes,
depending on whatever I was going through and whatever spoke to me in my own journey at that time. So didn't read them in sequence. I read them, you know, in different order, but I always loved his books as well.
Well, book two is by another really popular author, and this is a book that you say really inspired you on your path very early on. The God Code, The Secret of Our Past, The Promise of Our Future by Greg Braden, published in 2003.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for Greg Braden, and I've come to, you know, kind of see him also as a personal friend. While I was really in my journey through physics and reopening up to exploring into metaphysics and spirituality and looking for how can we unite science and spirituality, Greg Braden's books in general were, I just had so much respect because he delivered the science in a very clean way. He gave all of his references and how, you know, he kind of leads you through all of his books. He leads you on his own discovery process and through his research. And then he brings in, you know, and kind of combines it with some of the ancient wisdom, maybe from indigenous tribes or Egyptian, you know, he brings in some ancient wisdom. And then what he really speaks to is the human potential to awaken. And so what I love about the God Code in particular is I've had a personal fascination with the DNA and the potential that is stored within our DNA. And so I've done quite a bit of research into, well, how do we awaken more of that potential in our own DNA so that we can, you know, turn on more of our gifts? And when Greg brought the God Code out, it was kind of a mind blower to see that, you know, through his looking at the DNA, the construction of the DNA, like what's it made of, and then doing a bit of analysis of the atomic numbers or weights of each of the atoms that sort of make up the base code of the DNA, and then doing a bit of numerology with it, and then translating that over to ancient languages, he could actually see that the signature of the divine, the name of God, so to speak, from many ancient languages is actually written in our DNA. Just the basic, you know, what is it, A, T, G, and C of the DNA code. And yet it's somehow like revealing that only in a modern day world of when we can actually decode and read the DNA, read it like a book or a language, can we then start to connect it to the ancient traditions of gematria, for example, where the Kabbalistic Hebrew letters used to have a number associated with them. And so through the numbers, they were able to connect hidden messages. And it was just so inspiring. And Greg is out there often lecturing these days on the God Code again. And he just delivers a phenomenal message. I highly recommend that people go and read the book and also listen to him lecture live on the God Code, because just if ever you are in doubt, the divine is within, you'll find your evidence with some scientific weight to it through his book.
The DNA fascinates me too. And one of the things that I came across when I was researching a book I was working on was the fact that there are, I can't remember the guy's name, but a famous composer who actually turned his wife's DNA into music and played it back to her.
Wow.
And when you think about that, now that frequency is, you know, you're hearing it.
Yeah.
You know, it just fascinates me.
Yeah, that's a wonderful idea to make music out of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, what would your DNA sound like?
Yeah, right?
yeah. Book number three is The Kabbalion, a study of the Hermetic philosophy of ancient Egypt and Greece by the three initiates who did not reveal their names. 1908, this one was published.
Yeah, so the Kabbalion is it has nothing to do with Kabbalah. It has to do with Hermetic wisdom. And so it's, you know, 8,000-year-old tradition. And I remember when I first came across it, it was actually before I had gotten into the path of the mystery school, path of initiation. And I was at a metaphysical bookstore with my mom. I think we were in Virginia maybe exploring. We'd gone off to the Monroe Institute and you know, met with some people from the Edgar Cayce ARE, you know, kind of a group. But we were just at this metaphysical bookstore, and this book, I just saw it on the shelf, and the cover was just blue and a symbol on it. And then the title and the three initiates. And I thought, what is that book? It just kept calling out to me. And then I bought it. And when I read it, it was like, whoa, this is so what I was looking for, to bridge some of the scientific principles with ancient wisdom, and to have this, you know, confirmation. It was published in, you know, early 1900s, but they were initiates who were just publishing oral teachings that had been in the tradition for thousands of years. And to know that they had these seven hermetic principles that were universal principles, and then they applied to us and our lives as much as they applied to, you know, how things work in at a physics level or, you know, at a vibrational level. And but the key being, you know, that the all is mind, right? So it's science, but it also includes this universal mind that everything is ultimately a creation from within that one mind. And that if we can learn to harness the mind, then we can also learn to create in a very powerful way. So, you know, like what's popular, not maybe not as much right now, but still very popular is things like The Secret and the Law of Attraction. Well, the Law of Attraction is just based on the principle of vibration, which is one out of seven principles. And I think it's only when you really understand all seven principles that you have more of the full formula for how to really manifest powerfully in your life. But it's more than just being about egoic manifestation and just pursuing your desires. It's about the self and really coming to master oneself and then be able to master the impact that we have in the world. So the hermetic teachings, the seven hermetic principles, and there's so many deep layers to these principles. And to hermetic wisdom. And so it's been one of those things that I've deeply studied and read again and again and again. And I think is one of the keys to really bridging modern science with ancient wisdom to help us understand how these things come together.
When you come across books like this that have a real aha impact on you, how do you feel?
Mm. You know, I feel like it lights something up inside. You know, it makes you excited, and it also makes me it's like answering questions, but then with every question that gets answered, there's like all these new questions that open up. Things you hadn't, possibilities you haven't even thought of before, and all of a sudden you just start contemplating some of these insights and teachings from the deep wisdom, and you're like, whoa, well, what about this and what about that? And so it just opens up so much more questions, and in that process it expands your mind. Yeah. It expands your ability to perceive more possibilities than you might have before. And sometimes it can be challenging, but at the same time you'll feel an intuitive resonance of that universal wisdom. And that you can't argue it, right? It's like, yes. Opinion doesn't matter. You can't argue it. It's true. It is what it is, kind of like a physics law. And I find that the writings by initiates are very layered in their meanings. And you can be at one place on your journey and read it, and you'll get a certain amount of information from it. And you can be years down the line on your journey and then go reread it, and you're going to get whole new layers of information and meaning. And so a lot of the books that I have on my list were kind of like that. They're layered.
Yeah. I think I'm addicted to that feeling, yeah. You know, which is why I read so many books. And the danger, of course, then is there's an awful lot of books that you read that don't give you that feeling, and then you get disappointed.
Right. Well, and that's why I love what you're doing here with the No BS Spiritual Book Club, because you're really helping guide people to, you know, don't waste your time on those books that aren't going to give you that feeling. Like, really have a book list that really can inspire, that can move, that can transform you, that are going to fill your mind with the right information versus just a bunch of knowledge that isn't going to really serve you.
Yeah. And it, you know, it felt to me, as soon as it occurred to me, like a project that had to be birthed. The other thing that I've recently discovered about it, I don't know why it never occurred to me before, is that talking to people like you, you know, talking to so many luminaries in these fields, we're also capturing their wisdom and their knowledge through the lens of their books.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it's amazing that you're able to bring, you know, modern day sages, so to speak, together to be able to share their voice as well and what affected them on their journey. So I love what you're doing.
Thank you. So book number four, Kabbalah for the Modern World. And I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to pronounce this name correctly, but Mijin Gonzalez Whipler.
Yes. So when I first came to learning about Kabbalah, I was probably 25. I had not heard the word before in my life. So it was a brand new word to me when some of the, I was just getting involved with the Modern Mystery School and the path of initiation in the Western mystery tradition. And so every time they talked about Kabbalah, it kind of just went straight over my head at first, but I'd feel an internal buzz, you know, that feeling you get when you have the aha moment. I kept feeling that buzz inside of me, but I couldn't understand the words that they were saying to me. And I knew, like, I got to know more. There's something here for me. There's this intuitive call to study it. And so I had a list of books to read in Kabbalah. And the first one I thought, this one speaks more to some of the science. So I think I'm going to read this one. It was this Kabbalah for a Modern World by Gonzalez Whippler. And I was hooked within the first chapter. I mean, she basically took Genesis, you know, from the original Hebrew and retranslated it into English, but kind of expanded upon it. So not just a literal translation, but a translation based on the meaning of it, from deeper understanding of the meaning of every Hebrew letter and the certain words that are very Kabbalistic, and they're layers of meaning. You know, so for example, the word wisdom is not just wisdom. I mean, there's volumes worth of information within the Kabbalistic tradition about some of these words. The kingdom is another one that you'll hear a lot of in the Bible, and so. These were all retranslated, and the names of God, you know, in the Kabbalistic tradition, there's a lot of deep meaning to all of these ways of talking about the divine, and there are kind of aspects of that. So as I was reading her retranslation of Genesis and the story of creation, right, the cosmology of the universe and how it was created, at the same time, in my physics PhD studies, I was also attending lectures in astrophysics and modern day cosmology and the theories of, you know, Big Bang, but more than just the Big Bang, like the theories of what the modern day astrophysicists believe were the way in which the universe was created. And I saw like exact parallels between what she was writing in her retranslation of Genesis and what the astrophysicists were talking about. And I was like, wow, you know, if these Kabbalists have kind of had this, it wasn't the same language and metaphors, right? It was different metaphors, but still same essence, same concepts. And I thought, if they've had this insight for thousands of years, and our modern day science is only just now coming around and kind of saying the same thing, what else do they know? Right? What other insights can we gain from Kabbalah that can help, you know, inform our modern day science? And so I love that book. And I list it as one of my top 10. I mean, I've read many Kabbalah books and I have many others that I would recommend, but I think I list that one as being part of my top 10 because it was so influential in my journey. It was a real turning point and eye opener for me to see how the tree of life and Kabbalistic wisdom and teachings, not just from a Judaic perspective, but from a more universal perspective, was so applicable to life and to, you know, the science and to relationships and psychology and everything. You know, we can map all of these things onto the tree. And it just, I had so many aha moments starting to come as I woke up to the pattern of the tree of life and the organizational system that it is, and it helped me really connect a lot of dots. And one of my missions ever since I really started my spiritual journey again was to bridge science and spirituality. So that was a big one for me.
Yeah, I love that. And that's exactly what we need because, you know, it's very easy to go very woo-woo about this stuff. But when people like you come along and start grounding that information and giving us the science behind it, you know, then it makes it a lot easier for people to understand and to start, you know, waking up, really.
Yeah, the woo-woo. As a scientist, so, you know, I was immersed in my PhD studies while I was also going through my spiritual reawakening. Now, I had spirituality for kind of growing up, that influence is there, is always sort of in the background, but it was never a primary thing to me. But when I got immersed into my PhD studies, that was when I had this real shift happen in my life, because I got suddenly thrown into 80 hours of physics a week and all left brain, and all these other parts of my life that have been there were now not there. And I really kind of was starving for that balance again, which is what ultimately set me on my journey to really recognizing how important spirituality was, because it brings purpose, it brings meaning, it brings a greater depth of what this is all about in life, and why are we here, and what are we supposed to be doing. And that I felt brought, you know, joy and deeper sense of purpose to why I was even pursuing the science.
Did that create any conflict for you? I mean, did you have to keep the spiritual side in the closet?
Exactly. I was definitely in the closet about my spirituality while I was in graduate school for the first couple years. But then, you know, I was simultaneously walking this mystery tradition path and path of initiation. And I was in graduate school for 10 years, and I had started on my spiritual journey, like in my own prioritization of it, probably two or three years in to my PhD study. So for at least 7 years of my PhD process, I was living like two lives. But at some point along the way, I just like, I can't have two separate aspects of me. So it was maybe my first 4 years, I felt a lot of conflict, because in the physics world, it was like, you don't dare talk about spirituality, let alone consciousness. You couldn't even talk about consciousness in the physics world. So yeah, I had to search for my spiritual community outside of that, and then feel supported enough to ultimately come out of that, trying to hide it. Because, you know, there's a fear of losing credibility.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it must be so hard, you know, because you can get so excited about some of the connections that you're making, and yet you can't share them.
Yeah,
certainly not with, you know, your professors, etc.
Yeah, that was exactly what caused me ultimately to search and find the mystery schools. I was so hungry for a community and a tribe, you know, spiritual family that really got me. That you know, I put it out there to the universe. Help me find my spiritual tribe. Like, I'm really feeling kind of like a duck out of water here, or, you know, the swan amongst the ducks. You know, I just felt like I didn't fit. And then within 2 weeks, synchronicity started to happen and led me to someone who's connected in with the mystery school that I'm, modern mystery school that I'm still a part of now.
Yeah. Well, book number 5, Hermetica, the Greek Corpus Hermeticum and the Latin Asclepius by Hermes Trismegistus. Mm-hmm. Translated by Brian Copenhaver.
Yeah, so in the mystery school tradition that I study with, we don't really have one Bible, so to speak, or sacred text that we, you know, adhere to. We study all of you know, the ancient wisdom teachings from all the different traditions. So we don't really get into any particular, this is the only one. But if we did have a central core, it would be the Hermetica and the teachings of Hermes. And I think, again, it's because it is just so much about who are we, what is our potential, what is our destiny, how are we created? You know, the Hermetica just has such deep things, you know, wisdom teachings within it, all the way from Hermes to the Asclepius chapter. Asclepius gets kind of prophetic. I mean, this is thousands of years ago, but it seems like it's talking about today and how the world is today. And every time I read, and I've reread this, the Hermetica, so many times, and sometimes you just have to sit there and digest a sentence, let alone a chapter. You know, you just have to like pause on that sentence and really let it sink in. And what I find is that, you know, the best way to read the Hermetica is to realize that this is talking about our divine potential, and that divinity, God, source, whatever you want to call it, is within us. And it's about waking that up and helping us recognize that divinity within. Mm-hmm. And if you come at it from that perspective, then it reveals so much more about what it's really trying to say to us. But it is one of those ones that needs to be studied. Yes. But this is something that we teach quite often within the mystery school tradition.
And it's not light reading, and there is a reason why you chose this particular translation.
Yes, yes. Yeah, there's many translations of it, but this particular one is the one that's been most rigorously annotated, and there's a lot of comments and footnotes and whatnot, so it's very academic, and it had a lot of intentionality and accuracy behind the translation. So that's why we use this particular translation by Brian Copenhaver.
Okay, well, we are going to take a short break now, and we'll be back in a few minutes, so do stay tuned.
Om Times TV.
Maya Angelou once said that there is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside you. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and when I'm not hosting Om Times Media's flagship radio show, What Is Going On, and the No BS Spiritual Book Club, I help people share their untold stories. Books are my life, my joy, and my passion, and there is no greater reward than helping aspiring writers get their books out of their heads and into the hands of those who are waiting to read them. If you feel that you have a book in you, but don't know where to begin, visit sedgbeer.com, click on the Work With Me tab, and find out how my experience helping others tell their stories might be just what you've been looking for. That's sedgbeer.com, sedgbeer.com.
Imagine becoming a super influencer. Reinvent yourself. Invest in your brand, and then manifest your success with a robust spheric approach. Om Times Media and Broadcasting offers a unique and multifaceted way to become the spiritual and conscious influencer you deserve to be by putting your message across our powerful platform with its proven record of integrity and excellence. Through our produced shows, Om Times offers the opportunity to become a social media TV personality, a radio show host, an Om Times magazine columnist, and a syndicated podcaster, all in one shot. By live streaming your show on Om Times TV and broadcasting it across the extensive Om Times radio and TV networks, you become more than a host. You become an ambassador and a force for positive change. Om Times. Open yourself to the possibilities.
There are 16 million children struggling with hunger in America. That's 1 in 5 daughters, sons, neighbors, and classmates who don't know where their next meal is coming from. Yet billions of pounds of good food go to waste every year. It's time we do something about it. Feeding America is a nationwide network of food banks that helps provide meals to millions of kids and families in need. Visit feedingamerica.org to help them feed even more. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America.
Welcome back to Dr. Teresa Bullard-White's 10 Best Spiritual Books. Next up is a book that woke something up in your soul, you say. Mm-hmm. An ancient document that's had an really important influence on many Western spiritual and religious traditions. And of course, it is the Emerald Tablet, Alchemy mm-hmm. for Personal Transformation. So tell us about this book, when you came across it, and the impact it had on you.
So this book is written by Dennis William Hauck. The Emerald Tablet, of course, is from Hermes. But the Emerald Tablet is just one tablet. It's one page worth of text. And it is the formula that the whole tradition of alchemy and hermetics is built upon. And what Dennis Hauck did is he took the one page of the Emerald Tablet, and then he broke it down so that, because it's like coded, it's a codex. And he, from his own training within the alchemical tradition, helped to dissect it and helped to use it as a way to explain the 7 stages of alchemy, and then relate that to our own personal journey of transformation. Now, there's a little story that I have behind this particular book, because this was right in that time when I was making my transition to realizing spirituality was important. I was in my PhD studies. I was realizing spirituality was really important. I wanted to bring the two together, although I'm not sure I realized it at that time. But what I was finding was that in my search for how can we unite science and consciousness, or, you know, science, quantum physics, the Eastern philosophy, it was all very philosophical. So I was reading like the Tao of Physics, you know, by Fritjof Capra, some of these books, Wayne Dyer books, things like this. But what I found was it was all so conceptual and philosophical, but nothing tangible, nothing really grounded and applicable. And as an experimental scientist, I thought we need a way to ground this. It needs to be able to come down into the world of experiential life and even experimentation in the labs if we want to really ever unite the two in today's world. And right around the same time, I started having sort of messages brought to me that you need to study alchemy. You know, I had some reader, you know, say, oh, you need to study alchemy. And at that time, I was like, psh, I'm a real scientist. I don't have anything to learn from these alchemists. You know, that was my intellectual elitism and the story that we're kind of fed through science history. And then this book came because actually my mom was at a bookstore and there was this clearance table. And every time she passed the clearance table, this book would jump out at her and just say, buy me for Teresa, buy me for Teresa. And she'd look at it and she'd be like, I have no idea what this is. And she'd put it back down and she'd, you know, walk and go through the shelves and then come back and, you know, just kind of keep flashing or, you know, the voice, the intuitive voice kind of came in and said, you got to get this for her. And at the time I was like, don't buy me any more books. Like I can't, you know, cause I'm just immersed in my studies. And she finally gave it to me and she gave it to me apologetically. I know you said, don't give me any more books, but this one just wouldn't let me leave the bookstore without getting it for you. So here you go. And then I saw it had to do with alchemy and I was like, oh, I keep getting these signs about alchemy. So maybe I just need to let go of my arrogance and, you know, assumptions about it and actually read it. And as I read it, it was like, whoa, this isn't at all what I thought alchemy was. Like, this is a gold mine of wisdom. And it started to, like, I actually was starting to have really vivid dreams during that time. And I would have these very strange symbols coming through in the dreams. And then a week later, I would read about that exact symbol in the book. And it was like, it was almost a confirmation that something inside of me, almost like an ancient knowledge of my spirit, was inside of me and it was being reminded and reawakened as I was reading this book. So that became my personal Bible for a long time on my path. I absolutely love it. I highly recommend it to anyone. If you really want to understand your journey and what the stages that we go through in the transformational process, I can without a doubt recommend Dennis Houck's book.
Wise woman, your mom.
Yes.
Very wise woman.
Very fortunate to have her as my mother and mentor and you know, teacher and friend and all of that along the way. So.
What did she say when you told her that you were just riveted by this book?
She just said, well, yeah, I always trust my guidance, you know, always trust the voices that come through and say, you know, if I need to get it. I know you said you didn't want it, but I trust them more. So I got it for you. And she was very glad that it was waking something up for me.
Good. Book number 7, actually, this particular one was an audio book, Spontaneous Evolution, Our Positive Future, by Bruce Lipton and Steve Bierman. And this audio book was published in 2008. I think the book came before that. Mm-hmm. So you said that listening to this one seems more like an animated conversation between the authors than reading.
Yeah. I had so much fun listening to this conversation, well, this book, but it did seem more like a conversation between Dr. Bruce Lipton and Steve Bierman. And of course, Dr. Bruce Lipton brings his own experience from science and epigenetics and working with, you know, the DNA and the biology and so forth, and how our beliefs affect our epigenetic expression, which can turn on or off various genes and potentials within our DNA. And then Steve Bierman comes from a kind of political science, plus he's got his alter ego called Swami Vyandananda. So he brings the comedic side as well. And the two of them are just both very animated in life. And then they were very animated in their reading of the book for the audiobook. So it was just really engaging to listen to versus just reading it. I felt like I got more of the tonality, but also the dynamism and the weaving between the two of them was just a lot of fun. And what I love about the book is just it was really talking about our human evolution. And I think it was setting the record straight of some of the historical narrative that we've been fed about Darwinian evolution and even science and how it's, you know, trying to say everything is materialistic. That's an old paradigm, and they were really showing that we're evolving beyond that. And it wasn't even true. It was just a narrative that we were fed by certain, you know, agendas, and that the greater truth is that actually our evolution happens more through cooperation. And, you know, and then they worked with the metaphor of the butterfly, you know, the caterpillar transforming to the butterfly, and how we are going through that as a human race. And so I think by the end it was, you know, they're really addressing issues of our modern day, our society, our culture, our politics, like all of it, our science. And they were really bringing these issues to be looked at with a more critical eye, but a conversation that needs to happen. And then the picture that they were weaving for people was very empowering, very inspiring, very much like, hey, we can, you know, we really can move this forward and be the imaginal cells of the butterfly of the human race, so to speak, that can bring a whole new vision. And, you know, the one thing I thought as I was listening, I'm like, they're so point on everything here. But the one thing that I thought that they were missing was an understanding of alchemy. If they just had that understanding of alchemy and wove that in there, it would have just, you know, kind of finished the book off in a whole new way. So when I wrote my book, it was kind of, you know, to add that piece in to the conversation.
Mm, yeah. Book number 8 is one of my personal favorites. It's The Field, The Quest for the Secret Force of the Universe by Lynn McTaggart, published in 2003. And, you know, I love Lynn's work. She's such a great journalist.
Mm, very much so. Great journalist, great speaker. Yeah. She's really on a mission to serve and help people wake up to the power of us, you know, to and the power of altruism and you know, really helping each other to heal. And I mean, Lynn's book was so seminal because she was, I mean, I was reading as many books as I could on science and consciousness, science and spirituality and whatnot at that time when her book came out. And everything, as I said before, her book was very philosophical. She was the first one to bring the actual evidence, reporting on it from all these experimental scientists around the world whose work isn't very well known necessarily. Some of it is, some of it wasn't at that time, but it's very valid, very rigorous research. And it was very much showing like about biophotons. I mean, that was something I had never even heard of before her book, or, you know, some of the research that was being done, I think at MIT in neuroscience, and showing, you know, the connections of what happens within the, you know, ecstatic or meditative mystical states and what happens within the brain. So she really reported, and, you know, a lot of scientists just, they aren't good at communicating the significance of their research to the layperson. And Lynn filled that gap. And she really brought the science that is kind of, you know, in terms of the mainstream science, they would push it out to the fringe. It would actually be sometimes difficult for them to even get published because it wasn't according to the standard, you know, dogma of science. And so she brought it, you know, in a way where, okay, everyone can be exposed to this. And I think it really did the world a favor. And it was a huge, like, inspiration for me as an experimental scientist to see, oh, wow, there's really some amazing evidence out there of our, the ability of consciousness to affect things at a distance even. And I mean, there's just so much in there to really appreciate, so.
And look how things have changed in that 20 years since this book was published. Yes. You know, more and more physicists are writing books for the masses. explaining, you know, their discoveries. And wow, she could write another one. There's so much going on.
Well, she has written several others. And yeah, she, I mean, all of her books have been great, and the work that she does with, you know, Power of Eight and Intention Experiments and all of that is fantastic. So,
yeah. So book number nine is Science and the Akashic Field and Integral Theory of Everything by the wonderful Irvin Laszlo, published in 2004.
You know, I had read so many books on quantum physics by the time I read Irvin's book, and especially, you know, him trying to connect it to the Akashic field, or just the unified field. And I felt that his book was just so lucidly described and so poetic in its prose. And it was a masterpiece in terms of describing quantum physics and how the zero point field, the quantum field, really works. And then making it, you know, creating really relatable metaphors and ways of relating to that, because it is very difficult for people to really wrap their head around quantum. And I know a lot of people throw quantum around these days and they use it as a word, but they still don't really understand what it means, other than, well, we're all connected, or, you know, it's all about possibility and you just have to think about it and observe it and then it'll come to be. You know, it's very kind of, the way it's used in some of the new ages is very watered down. And I thought that Irvin Laszlo's book on the science in the Akashic field is just, it was deep, and it, you know, was really bridging from the rigorous mathematical based approach to quantum physics to, you know, and yet the layperson's ability to understand, and then recognizing how it connects into ancient wisdom teachings. So I so appreciated his book. I thought, wow, I wish I had read this one first in all my searches.
Yeah, that's what we need more of.
Yeah.
So the last one, book number 10, The World is Sound, Nada Brahma, Music and the Landscape of Consciousness by Joachim Ernst Behrendt. This always challenges me, all of these foreign names.
Joachim Ernst Behrendt, I believe.
How are you pronouncing it?
Joachim, I believe. So this one actually my mom introduced to me. And it is very much about how, you know, the story of creation being a process of sound. And, you know, in all the ancient traditions, they would say either the universe was spoken, like God spoke and said, or the universe was sung into existence, or, you know, there's always this kind of reference to sound or the breath and the vibration in some way. And so in Nada Brahma, The World is Sound, it's bringing all of this together, all of this both ancient wisdom and modern science about sound, and how, you know, there's some science in there that talks about how, you know, the power of the ear, and how we can hear so many more octaves of sound versus, you know, like the eyes only see maybe one octave of frequency range, whereas the ears, you know, is like 8 to 10 octaves of frequency range. And while, you know, we might go to sleep, for example, the eyes and, you know, the senses and a lot of the body kind of quiets down and goes to sleep, the ears never do. So the ears are, you know, working from within the fetus. They're one of the first organs that starts to work, other than maybe the heart and the brain. Is the first sense organ is the ears, and is often the last one to go before we die. And it talks about how the ears are the gateway to transcendence. And so this was also one of those books that was just very poetic in its prose and its ability to really just so well crafted and so well describing the power of sound to help us in our journey of spiritual awakening and expanding consciousness. So I definitely would recommend it. It's one of the books that not a lot of people know about. But well worth the read.
I think that there is so much to be learned about sound still, and it's one of the areas that really fascinates me. I think the future of medicine lies in sound, and there are certainly a lot of things that they're doing right now, you know, in that direction. And one of the things that really fascinated me was, you know, I've studied astrology for many years. And about 30 years ago, I came across this little book that an engineer had written about astrology. Mm. And in it, he said that he had met a composer who said to him, give me your birth chart and I can turn it into music. And he played it back to him when he'd composed, and he said that the music made the hairs on the back of his neck stand on end.
Wow. Yeah. So now we have our DNA being made into music, our birth chart being made into music, the music of the spheres from the Pythagorean times.
And a lot of keys in there.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Even every organ within the body has its own signature sound pattern. And when it's healthy, it has a certain harmonic state. When it gets when it gets diseased or sick, it becomes disharmonious. And so sound can definitely, harmonic sound of the right kind of frequencies and patterns can be definitely used for healing. And I would agree with you that it's a major key for the medicine of the future.
Yeah. Have you ever listened to the music of the plants?
I have, yeah, you know, where they kind of touch and interact with the plants. It's beautiful, wonderful.
Yes. I once was at Damanhur in Italy, and we had a flautist with us, and she was playing her flute, and then she'd stop, and you would hear the plant interact, you know, then the plant would start singing according to this particular machine that it was, you know, strapped to, and they had this little duet going on. You know,
amazing. Yeah.
Just incredible.
Yeah. Well, the plants are certainly alive, but we don't think of them as having an interactive consciousness in that way until you hear them.
Yes.
And when you hear them, you actually can also start to become in tune with them even without the audio playing through the electrodes. You can just sort of feel their vibration and them talking to you, almost like, you know, hey, I need some water. Or hey. Yeah. Let's clean up. Let's get some light. You know, let's kind of shift things around here. So, yeah.
Well, that's your 10 best list. Let's talk a little bit about you now. Mystery schools. Mm-hmm. They seem to be enjoying a renaissance right now. Everybody seems to be very interested in the information that the mystery schools have. Tell us a little bit about the modern mystery school.
Mm-hmm. So the modern mystery school is... it's actually ancient lineage that goes all the way back to, they say, the time of King Solomon, but it's not necessarily, it's not tied to any particular religion. The teachings go back as far as Hermes and the Hermetic tradition, which is, you know, thousands and thousands of years. So, but it is an unbroken lineage of passing on the tools and the teachings and the methods for our empowerment. From a natural kind of way that we say all the keys are within you, all the knowledge that you need is within you. We've just sort of forgotten it. And we just need those keys to unlocking those gates that are within us, those hidden potentials that are within us. And so these this universal system of tools and teachings and initiations and activations and all of this have been handed down through the mystery school lineage for thousands of years. And there have been times where, you know, humanity was more open, there's more tolerance, and in those times it would surface. And then there would be other times where they'd start to get suppressed because they'd maybe threaten whatever powers that be, and it would get driven underground because there'd be like inquisitions or witch hunts and drive it underground. And every time that it would resurface, it would coincide with like a renaissance, a golden age, an age of enlightenment, and today's era. And any time that it would get suppressed, it would kind of be around, like a dark age. And so we're living in a time now where there is more opportunity. There is more, at least in the West, in the free world, there's more, spiritual kind of tolerance of various perspectives. And so it's become open since 1997, but it is a path of initiation. So it's not just a mystery school in the sense of we study the mysteries and we read the books by the initiates. It is a path of initiation where there is an unbroken line of passing on empowerment through the initiatory tradition. And there's oral teachings that happen, like 95% of what we hand down is probably through oral teaching still, in person still. So it's still an ancient kind of way of doing it. But there's a reason for that, because there's an energetic transmission that happens that really has the most direct physical impact when we gather together in person versus just doing it online, for example. I mean, I share some teachings through mystery teachings, but there's only so much you can share through that kind of a medium. It really has to be in person to immerse yourself and have that real impact of transformation.
Do you find too that, you know, because you have these in-person gatherings, you know, that collective energy really benefits everybody, and the people that went before, you know, have already created a morphic field that others can step into at a higher level than they might have done otherwise.
Yeah, that's exactly a big part of the power of initiation, is that there is this morphic field or pool or collective from all those who've come before us in that lineage, and we're getting connected into that. So then when we do our prayers or our, you know, manifestation process or whatever it may be, we're able to draw from that support that comes from that. And it amplifies what we can accomplish versus prior to initiation, you're drawing on your own direct connection. We still can do that, but it just, everything gets stronger. And then there are certain rituals, for example, that are handed down that have been done in a particular way for, you know, hundreds of thousands of years. And when you do them in that way, it draws that same power and energy to you, the sympathetic resonance. And so it is, and what I love about it is that it is so practical. Like the mystery school is not just about studying the theory and the philosophy. It's there. But we say that the knowledge and the teachings are only good to the degree that they serve you to awaken to your greater potential. And this is ultimately about you becoming your own, you know, master teacher, so to speak, rather than having, you know, all the powers outside of you or the wisdoms outside of you. No, it's all within you. And we want to help you awaken that. Here's the tools. Let's put the tools of power in your hands. And now your own enlightenment is in your hands. Which means there's responsibility on the self to use those tools. If you don't use the tools, they're not going to work for you. But it's very practical. It's very applied. It's very grounded. And it's this perfect balance between, you know, the mystical and the kind of creative right brain with the scientific and the reason and logic. And we talk about walking the middle pillar, the middle path. That unites these two kind of approaches from the inner to the outer and vice versa. So it's been an amazing path. I mean, I teach for them now because it just did so much for me. Actually, the transformation that I experienced from my work with the Mystery School is what, one, it started really bringing a lot of joy into my life. And two, it was so transformative and powerful. And then the tools were being handed down to me to share with others. I thought, wow, you know, I've gained so much, you know, empowerment from this. Why not actually share this with people? And so I changed my course in life from becoming just a research scientist to teaching mystery, you know, school type teachings and sharing these tools with others. Because I figured I want to really make an active impact in the world and in the lives of others at this critical time on the planet where we are really needing to make a massive shift in human consciousness. And I thought that this is one of the best ways I could serve.
Mm. Now, you also wrote the book Game Changers, Social Alchemists in the 21st Century, and you've got a new book coming out on the quantum paradigm. Who are the game changers?
Well, all of us who are wanting to be a part of that shift in collective consciousness and who are ready to take action, right? It's not just about thinking and being, it's about really being active in the world and being somebody who's going to try and be, you know, participating in this grand social alchemy process that we're going through. And so the Game Changers book is very much about it's like a primer, you know, it's giving people a taste of what the alchemical formula tells us about the stages that we go through in the transformational journey. And it relates to both our personal journey and what we might encounter at those different stages. So you can kind of assess, where am I on that cycle of transformation? And then where do I need to get to successfully move through this? But then I also take it into the context of our modern day society, especially in the Western world, and the transformation that we've been going through societally since the new millennium. And I lay that out according to the stages of alchemy to give people a kind of a new perspective on all the turmoil that's happening in our you know, our society and our world. And so, yeah, it was always just meant to be a primer. It's a really easy read, but there is a lot packed into it at the same time. And I think a lot of people can really relate when they're on a spiritual journey, and they can read that and relate to so much. And my hope is that it gives people more hope about, you know, what's happening in the world, even though it seems like things are breaking apart and kind of going into chaos. I hope to bring that hope to people that actually there's an alchemy happening, but it's not guaranteed that we're going to successfully make the leap. So we need those people who want to be game changers to participate in becoming the alchemist, more consciously participating in the process versus just kind of going along with the flow of it. Yeah. And then my new book that I'm working on now is helping shift and bring that deeper understanding of the quantum principles and how can we harness those in our daily lives to really create that shift in consciousness out of old kind of Newtonian ways of perceiving the world around us and into a more quantum way. And what does that mean to our daily lives? Not just kind of big concepts, but how do we really apply it and live it?
Yeah. Yeah, because that's it. It's all got to come back to the individual, hasn't it? So that they can take it and run with it. So in 2012, you founded QLA Consulting. Mm-hmm. And in 2020, you co-founded the Quantum Learning Academy. Tell mm-hmm. me about those endeavors.
Well, both of them are geared towards really trying to bring the quantum paradigm forward and work with people who aren't not necessarily into the spiritual metaphysical side of things, but they do want to make a difference in the world. So we're using, you know, the science as a language to bridge into how can we harness consciousness? How can we expand consciousness and yet understand how it's based on scientific principles? And it kind of bridges into that mystical territory. But it's, you know, it's the bridge, the connection. But it's very much about like the Quantum Learning Academy. We talk about four pillars. We have body, you know, how do we really master things at a physical level? We have the mind and mind-body connection that happens there and how can we heal within that mental frame, and then soul and spirit. And so we have the spiritual side come in. And so it's very much a comprehensive with these four pillars to our personal journey of transformation and healing and empowerment. And then at the center of all of that is the quantum learning technique, or that, you know, working with quantum meditations and how do we really access a state of total coherence so that we can tap into the potential stored within the quantum field. So this is something that we're launching. It's been a process to launch the Quantum Learning Academy over the last couple of years. I've been through a lot of life changes, moving country, getting married, all of this. But we're launching our first program this year in June. So we're looking forward to that.
So you had a show on Gaia Television, and mm-hmm. you also have your own Quantum Minds show. I was watching some of your videos just yesterday with the Hertax. Very nice. Interesting. Yes. Do you find you were based in America, mm-hmm. Now you're based in the UK, quite different countries, you know, age-wise, lineage, you name it, it couldn't be more different. Do you find the energy different in the UK than where you were in America?
Very much so. What I find with the UK is that it's very grounded. It's very down to earth. I'm up in Northern England, right? A lot of people from America, when they think UK, they think London. Yeah. So I'm actually not in London, which I visit very often. It's a very metropolitan, very diverse, international community that lives in London. But I live in the north of England, which is very, it's still diverse, but it's very grounded, you know, salt of the earth kind of people here. And so I actually really appreciate it because, you know, they're very just you know, kind of call it as it is, and yet very practical and hardworking and get things done. But what I love about what I've been experiencing here, you know, coming from America and especially from the West Coast, right? So I'm a West Coast girl, and I lived in California most of my life, and then Denver for 4 years, Seattle for 10 years, and, you know, really spent a lot of time on the Western states. What I find there is it's, you know, very creative. There's a lot of creative energy, new paradigms,
yes,
new trends, you know, but everybody wants to be kind of their creative individualism. And so they're always pushing the envelope, especially in California. It's always pushing the edge of what's the next new thing. And then that often flows from west to east, you know, across the Western world, modern world, I suppose. But sometimes it's a bit too crazy, too ungrounded. It can get a bit airy-fairy. And for me as a scientist and just really grounded, practical person, I wanted that, you know, the roots, the deeper roots. And what I have found here in the UK is there's so much groundedness because there's so many layers of history. You know, like our layers of history don't go nearly as deep, but it's a couple hundred years in the US, whereas, you know, I mean, you can get into Native American tradition, of course, but in terms of modern day US culture, it's only a couple hundred years worth of history. Whereas here, you have layers and layers of thousands of years of history. And just exploring some of that history and every little area that I've traveled to, just in the UK, let alone in Europe. I mean, there's just like pockets of different kinds of energies all over here. And, you know, there's sacred sites, and then there's all these layers and different dialects, even different accents, you know, just neighboring towns have completely different colloquialisms. And so it's all quite an adventure. And I think, you know, and we've traveled into Ireland and up to Scotland in the Highlands, and I had some ancestral, you know, research that I was doing. And so I just feel like being here, because I have ancestral roots here, it has actually grounded me more into feeling like, yeah, I'm where I'm supposed to be. And yet I do find, from coming from a metaphysical, being a teacher and so forth, that the US is at least 20 years ahead of the UK in terms of what they're open to. And, you know, things like yoga and mindfulness and whatnot, it's getting here, you know, it's getting there here, but not as much. And so people are still more skeptical and narrow in their definition of what spirituality means here in the UK. You know, like I've talked to some people here in Northern England, and when I've said spirituality, they're like, do you mean religion or do you mean mediumship? That's the only two things that they think about when you say spirituality. It's like, no, there's a whole spectrum in between. So, you know, they just haven't had as much exposure here. So it's been an interesting process to figure out, okay, what's the right language? What's the right approach here? Because I can't just come out with it because people don't quite get it. Down in London, it's different, but up here, it's, yeah.
Do you find, you know, on a energetic level, a multidimensional level, that you have different experiences in England than you might have done in America?
It's a good question. I feel like there's definitely more power spots here. I just the fact that the UK is an island, and the energy just feels more potent because it's concentrated within the landmass, and there's a lot of power spots here, and there are a lot of like ancient, you know, sites and stone circles and all of that. So there is just, yeah, there's more. I'm finding a whole new level of fascination with history that I haven't really had in the past. Like, history was my least favorite subject when I was in school. But now that I'm here, it's a history that's alive. It's a history that I can see how it's affected the people, the consciousness, the, you know, the ways of being. And so I'm finding myself wherever I travel in Europe, going deep into the ancient history, like pre-Roman history, what was here before, and really getting to know the energy of the land. Yeah. And I think that, you know, there's a lot more connection to that, almost more shamanic energy here, that is so much, very much in the DNA of the people here. And so there's a certain aliveness, there's a certain thin veil at certain places here in the UK, not everywhere necessarily, but certain places, the veil is very thin here. And there is still belief, you know, I mean, people talk about ghosts all the time here, whereas mm-hmm. in the US, it's only the ghost hunters that talk about it.
Yeah. So one last question before we close. With all the wisdom and the knowledge that you've gained, what would you tell your 15, 16, 17-year-old teenage self that may have helped her on her path?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would have told her that you are unique, you know, that you have a unique purpose, a unique set of gifts that are innate within you, and you don't need to fit in with everybody else. Because as a teenager, I had a lot of insecurity wanting to fit in, and I never felt like I fit in, but it really created a lot of inner turmoil. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of healing to do on my journey. But where I stand today, it's like I can embrace that uniqueness, and that, you know, that everything in my life has been exactly on point to bring me to the place that I'm at today, to be able to serve and fulfill that greater purpose that I have, and the joy that comes from that, and it feels so right. And I think back then, as a child, I had these kind of visions that this would be what I would want to do. But then as a teenager, I got really confused that it doesn't, I don't know how that's possible, or it doesn't fit, or, you know, I just need to fit into the mainstream. So I would tell her, you know, that you're meant to be uniquely you. And don't try to fit other people's box. Just follow your heart and what feels right within you, and know that there's huge power and potential within you that you just need to unlock and trust in that. And I think trusting in that would have served me a lot more in my youth.
I think the teenagers, more than anyone, need to have those postcards from their future selves, yeah. You know, just to help them along the way.
Yeah, the preteens and the teens. Yeah, this is mm-hmm. such a turmoil, emotional, confusing time. And in the world today, teenagers are like, there's so much more confusion. There's so many more challenges that they're having to deal with that we never had to deal with. Okay. And it is difficult. And I think because of that confusion, they're lost. A lot of them are lost, and yet they have amazing gifts, and yet, you know, they're kind of thinking that the thing to be, you know, the popular thing right now is to have mental health issues, or, you know, to be a victim to something. And it's like, no, that you are not a victim, and don't play that story in your mind, because it's that story that, becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So change that, you know, and really know that you're here to do something amazing and great. But it takes work. Yeah. You know? It takes work.
Yeah, it does. Dr. Teresa Bullard-White, thank you so much for adding your 10 best spiritual books to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's library of recommendations. It's been a real treat.
Yeah, thank you, Sandy, for the invitation and the opportunity. And I've really loved the conversation and everything that you've also contributed, your experience base and the wisdom that you have to share as well. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's it for this week. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. I'll be back at the same time next week with another 10 best interview for the No BS Spiritual Book Club. Till then, it's goodbye from me, and a really profound thank you to Dr. Teresa Bullard-White.
Thank you.